from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Democrat Elizabeth Austin, Professor Peter Hanna, Republican Josh Cantrell, and Kathy Posner, former Assistant Legislative Inspector General for Chicago. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And also, if you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web at beyondthebeltway.com. And also, if you missed the show on a Sunday night, but also if you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook. Look for the Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont Facebook page, and you'll see us smack dab in the middle of your computer. Again, as we always say, there's lots to talk about this evening, and we're going to talk about a lot of things that happened last week. But we're going to begin by talking about what happens next. And so I want to begin, and the question that I'm going to ask everybody is, where do we go as a nation now? Now that the fighting is over last week, obviously we've got an election coming up in November. We're going to talk about that as the program unfolds. But where do we go as a nation to try to bring the sides together, if that's even at all possible? Elizabeth Austin, we're going to start with you.
Well, why don't you start with a hard question instead? this is painful for me as an American and as a patriot. I am uncomfortable when people say the nation has never been more divided, because I remember, well, I don't remember the Civil War, no matter what my children may have told you. But, you know, there have been times that this nation has been severely divided, and we have come together afterward. And so I'm hopeful, but I don't know how we get past the feeling of mutual disrespect and distrust. I just would say, there was, you know, when Eisenhower was appointing Supreme Court justices, and apparently he had a million of them. It was crazy. Eisenhower had five nominations. And he was making strategic choices. He chose Earl Warren because he wanted a conservative chief justice. That didn't turn out the way he had hoped. But there was an emphasis on bringing things together and to have candidates that everyone could vote for. You get 70 votes.
Okay. Let's go to Kathy Posner. You're one of our card-carrying, semi-card-carrying Republicans, although you're very independent. What's your answer to that very difficult question?
I want to start off by saying that we have the lowest unemployment rate in 49 years. So obviously the country is doing something right, even though there might be anger in what people are feeling about certain things. So I'd rather see a low unemployment than worry about making a Democrat happy.
But what is it more than just making a Democrat happy? Is there anything that's important to bring the nation together, or is a split nation okay?
I think a split nation is okay, because you want to hear both sides of the story before you make the decision, which would be the Republican decision.
Peter, what's wrong with that? Peter is one of our guests, Peter Narrow. And a question to you, Hannah, Mr. Hannah, Professor Hannah. What's wrong with a 50-50 nation?
I mean, nothing's wrong. I think the first question that you you asked, you know, where do we go from here? Really, in a normal time, in a civil time, you look to the leader to move you forward. We don't have a leader who's moving us forward. We have a leader who engages in pettiness, divisiveness, and Kathy, to your point about the unemployment.
Is that the Democratic side or the Republican side?
Democratic side, referring to the Republican leader, the leader of the country, okay. President Trump. But to your point about unemployment being low, you know, that doesn't mean that equality is high. That doesn't mean that the disparity in power and, you know, wealth and, you know, quality of living is, you know, getting any better. So, yes, it's great that unemployment is low, but, I mean, you know, first-year economic student anywhere could tell you that if you slash corporate taxes across the board the way this government has, you know, there's going to be more corporate money and more jobs. But
Josh,
that's not the end of it.
Josh, our other Republican, where do we go next? That's the question.
Well, I'd like to see us come together and heal, and I think Kathy, others have, I'm sorry, Elizabeth made a good point about, like, the country, we went through the Civil War, the late 60s, 1968 was probably worse than this. But unfortunately, I'm not optimistic, and I'm just going to say it. I think that we cannot come together as a country until the Democrats accept the election results. And I think once that happens and they accept the fact that they lost fair and square in 2016, we can start to come together.
Elizabeth, is that part of the issue?
It's a difficult question because it's true that under the rules of the game, he got more electoral votes and he won. However, it's also true that 3 million more people voted for Hillary Clinton. And, you know, we have created a situation where increasingly you can lose the popular vote and win the electoral vote. And it starts to create concerns about what does it mean to have rule by the majority if the minority keeps winning.
So you make a very good point, actually, because we went through this in 2000 as well.
Yes,
and
I know.
Back then, I was on your side. I wanted Gore Lieberman to win. I'm not, like, so hardcore that I haven't voted for the other side. And I was very upset, and I could feel it. And, I can sympathize, or I should say empathize, with what you're going through. But the Electoral College is, that's the rules of the game.
I understand
and it's got to be changed by constitutional amendment. It's probably not going to happen. So,
But is there a responsibility, I'm going to ask Peter, is there a responsible for both sides, and again, tonight we're talking about the Democrats, that they have to educate their constituents of what the rules of the game are? And the rules of the game are, you know what, if you win in certain states, you're the president. You can make all these appointments. It doesn't make any difference that Hillary Clinton got 3 million votes. It doesn't make any difference. It may make difference if you look at the campaign in congressional districts, that if somebody won a congressional district, you know, they say that the Democrat should probably be the congressman from that district. But that's not even the case.
Yeah, I mean, the simplest rule of the game that I think everyone, especially the Democratic side, need to appreciate is that elections have consequences, period.
Absolutely.
They have rules, too.
Kathy, rules? So the question is, at this particular point, what is the worst thing, in your opinion, that the Republicans can do now?
Think of the worst thing. I can't think of anything really horrible. Probably in
be poor winners. Be poor winners.
No, we should be kind
gracious.
Winners. We should be gracious winners.
Do you
winners.
Think the president has the ability to be a
no,
kind winner?
He does not. Unfortunately, he doesn't have.
I disagree. I've seen it, more maturity on the president's part in the last couple of weeks than I have recently. And again, the bar is somewhat low there in terms of that. But, I mean, if you look at his approval ratings,
they're increasing.
They're increasing. And I think that he handled the whole Kavanaugh thing pretty well, actually.
When we come back, we're going to get a reaction. 1-800-723-8029. Not only what is next, but again, literally what is next between now and November. We've got a midterms coming up. The impact of last week on November. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Are you planning for the day when you can retire to your dream home in Palm Springs, California? A day surrounded by spectacular scenery, golf courses, a rich cultural life, and great dining? If you are, you'll need a guide, someone who knows where to look, an experienced broker, someone who knows the desert communities of Southern California and all they have to offer. That person is Brian Beard, who's been making dreams come true for over 13 years, selling over $100 million in real estate, including celebrity and architecturally significant homes to the rich and famous, and more importantly, to people just like you. Brian's company, Coldwell Banker, has agents worldwide, but Brian Beard is your man in Palm Springs. Call Brian now at 760-799-7096. That's 760-799-7096. Or visit him online at briansellsthedesert.com.
Bruce
still went back in Chicago. And Elizabeth Austin, you wanted to make a case about what the Democrats need to do next.
I'm surprisingly going to agree with you because I believe that the Democrats dropped the ball 20 years ago and were not adequately focused on elections at the local level and then at the state level. And there was a lack of understanding that the local level leads inexorably to the state level, and the state level is where decisions are made about redistricting and about many of the laws that hit people where they live. And so because we were focused more on the overall picture, we failed to start raising those candidates from the village halls, the city halls. And so we didn't have a deep bench, and we didn't have the majorities in the state legislatures when we needed them.
Peter, what would you add to that?
I agree with everything Elizabeth said, and I would add, you know, it's why most of the governor's offices across the country are occupied by Republicans at this time. But, you know, I think Elizabeth's earlier point about ultimately, you know, the Electoral College and the popular vote, it leads to some weird, squirrely results. So as I was saying during the break, four of the five in the conservative majority in the Supreme Court were appointed by presidents who won the office of the president despite losing the popular vote. The Supreme Court is supposed to be in tune with sort of the sentiment and the direction the country is going and the popular sort of sentiment couched in the Constitution and interpreting the Constitution. But there, I mean, again, if you actually look at Supreme Court decisions, you'll see again and again sort of a tip of the hat to where the country is going. And that's just the way it is.
So it shouldn't be. I mean, a Supreme Court justice should not make any decision based on what the country or the people are feeling. They're supposed to make all decisions based on the Constitution.
Can I ask you one question? So let's say I go home and before I've gone to law, I have an electrical engineering background, and I dust off my degree and I build a handheld laser, a gun basically a laser that I use to carve people up, just like a phaser in Star Trek. You know, do you think that at some point the Supreme Court, if it, you know, is considering that legality of that weapon, do you think they are allowed to actually kind of consider where we are technologically, where we are in time? I mean, they have to. They can't just look at the Second Amendment and assume that, you know, flintlock rifles are the standard by which to...
Technology is different from sentiment. You said the sentiment of the people. If the sentiment of the people now are more pro-life than pro-choice, and if we get a Supreme Court that would go...
But technology does inform sentiment. That's why we have pills like, you know, Plan B. That's a technology, essentially, a pharmaceutical technology that someone could take to, you know, right after possible conception to have an abortion, more or less.
Josh.
So, I'm going to disagree with Peter and just say that the winner of the presidency gets to pick who he or she wants to put on the Supreme Court, the appellate courts, and the district courts. And this president has done a remarkable job of that, not all the way down to the lower courts, and that's just how things go. The Senate has a role to advise and consent. What we saw here with Kavanaugh was more search and destroy, and I think that's why our side is so fired up about this situation.
I want to talk about again how you make your case, following up on what Elizabeth said. What can the Democrats do to get back in the game and basically, in my opinion, maybe clean up a little bit some mistakes that might have been made, in my opinion, last week? I think they went over the top in their efforts to destroy Brett Kavanaugh and to push the scenario of Dr. Ford forward. That'll be something we will talk about. But last night in Kansas, the president was out doing one of his campaign rallies, and as he frequently does, he knows how to turn a phrase and maybe come up with if not a bumper sticker, something that will be a focus of Republican candidates between now and November based on the way the Democrats acted and their supporters acted for the last couple of weeks. Listen to the president from last night.
You don't hand matches to an arsonist. And you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob, and that's what they've become.
Josh, is that a good message?
I think it's a great message. I have to say that, Bruce, as you know, I was a never-Trumper, and you've seen my evolution.
I have.
I'm now supportive of the president. I love his policies. I have a lot of people on my social media page that follow me who are never Trumpers and independents. Even they now are on board. This Kavanaugh fight has brought the GOP together like it hasn't been since Trump first entered the scene.
Elizabeth Austin, I want to get your reaction to the president's fine-tuning the message between now and November.
I have to say that when I think of an angry mob, I do think of Charlottesville and not ladies in Washington, D.C. So I would disagree with the president on some general principles.
Would you say that angry mobs can be both left and right?
Absolutely.
And screaming in the face of a United States senator, is that good politics or bad politics?
I'm not sure. We'll see, I think, in November. I think that...
What do you think, though? I mean, what do you think when you see people at this particular case on one side? And by the way, I'm not saying that there haven't been moments where Republicans or conservatives in the past may have used their voices, raised their voices, and gotten in the face of Democrats that they don't like. That has happened from time to time over the last 50 years. I'm talking about what happened last week, the video that's playing now and is going to play over and over again, I think to reinforce what the president had to say, is they're going to see angry people who are screaming in the face of a United States senator or trying to defeat one who voted for Judge Kavanaugh. Is that good or bad?
I honestly don't know, because I think it's important that these were angry women. And so I don't think it's as frightening to viewers, perhaps, as angry men.
Sexist, saying that women can't be as powerful as men.
I've
been frightened through my life by both women, men, in equal part. But
when you're talking about the politics of an image, I'm not sure. I think a lot of us who have had sexual assault happen in our lives feel that anger. And I think that crosses party lines. I honestly don't know how this is going to play out. I am as interested as the next person because I don't know what the right way is to go politically.
So you have been a victim in the past?
You know, it's an interesting point because I don't think victim is the right word. I don't think survivor is the right word. I think target is the right word.
And I was a victim of a sexual assault and of sexual harassment.
Okay. This is the third week in a row where a female guest on this show has admitted to some form of sexual as being a victim or a recipient of unwanted sexual attacks.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my question. Everybody should talk about it. What lesson did women who have been sexually assaulted in the past, what lesson did they learn last week because of these hearings?
The lesson that I learned is that it does not rise to the level of policy in the Republican Party. Now, I don't know. I mean,
I would agree completely. I think the lesson they learned is that the Republican agenda trumps everything. No pun intended, including, individual and powerful experiences. I think anyone who watched Christine Blasey Ford's testimony, saw that this is a woman whose entire life path was really altered and who she is today was really affected by whatever occurred,
But Peter, as an attorney, by the way, I would agree with that. Having watched it, I was moved by her testimony. But as a lawyer and also as a journalist, there were some questions that needed to be asked. No one stepped forward to corroborate her story, including her best friend. Nobody.
Well, We don't know.
As a lawyer, I mean, how do you react to that?
That's a great question. I'd just like to make two points. One, there was really no opportunity for the FBI to get the input and the testimony or the sworn statements of the folks who would have stepped up. There are tons of reports across the media in New York.
There were four people that she identified that were at the party. Just four.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI talked to all four. No one would cooperate. If there were others that could cooperate, why were they not mentioned over the last 35 years? Why were they not mentioned to her psychologist? And most importantly, when the microphones of the world were on and everybody was watching her, why didn't she mention other names? She mentioned four names, and they were all interviewed by the FBI more than once.
Well, she mentioned four names at the, you know, so-called party, which wasn't a party, it was a gathering. And again, I'm not a senator. I didn't have access to the small room that the 100-page report was sitting in. I had no chance to look at it. I don't know what was said by those folks. But to your point about me as a lawyer and what would I do, this wasn't a criminal prosecution.
No.
If I were interviewing at a fast food restaurant and someone called my putative manager and said, hey, Peter sexually assaulted me, and a second person said, yes, he did that to me too, and a third said, and he started a bar fight and he was a belligerent drunk, I wouldn't even get the job as the checkout clerk. And this is a person who is going to be one of nine who will be dictating policy that affects men, women, sexual assault survivors, et cetera, for another few decades possibly.
Seven background checks, over 1 million pages of documents. Kavanaugh has been subjected to 32 hours of testimony, has been subjected to more scrutiny than any Supreme Court justice in history. And so getting back to your original question about Dr. Ford, who I feel very badly for, I really do. I think the lesson is not to trust your story and not to trust your that the Democrats are going to take care of you, because the way that Dianne Feinstein and her office handled this
right.
with the leak is absolutely despicable. And what I want to see happen is a full investigation of who leaked Dr. Ford's name.
I want to do
she
that
too.
She
didn't deserve this.
But before that, before it went to Dianne Feinstein, why didn't she get her best friend to vouch for her? Her best friend. Before she wrote any letter to anybody, why didn't she have her best friend on her side?
Maybe because she didn't think it was possible that no one would believe her.
Or because she didn't want to ensnare her.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. I understand that we're having some problem with our feed, our live stream feed this evening. I'm told that we are on Facebook, but we're not on YouTube. So if you're watching us on YouTube, you're not watching us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're watching us on Facebook, you should be able to be seeing us. And again, the best way to confirm that with us is to send us a note or give us a call at 1-800-723-8029. We're working to figure out what happened. By the way, I just want to make a point that I asked the guests before the break, and that is on the issue of women and what should women do. I hope what happened last week does not dissuade women from coming forward to tell their story to a local jurisdiction or to their therapist, to their priest, to their pastor, to someone. I think the lesson is, however, is that if indeed you're going to go public, I mean, in this particular case, Dr. Ford trusted her local Democratic representative. She trusted Dianne Feinstein. She told her story. She asked that her name not be moved forward, and that speaks to Josh's concern about how do we get to the bottom of that, because she was outed by a Democrat. If it wasn't one of those groups, it was her lawyers who outed her, or she became a good friend. She did not want this to happen. And the big issue here is, if you're going to make a story and you're going to reveal your story, have witnesses. Your best friend has got to be on your side from the moment you make your charge. If that doesn't exist, you're going to be treated like many people have treated Dr. Ford. And that is, hey, nobody is corroborating what you're telling. So if you can't corroborate it, you may have the same problem that Dr. Ford did. But if you can cooperate, you have every bit of responsibility, not just because this is the Me Too time in our society. You need help. And someone, if the statute of limitation is not passed, maybe should go to jail. And that's your responsibility.
How many women have a witness when they're sexually assaulted and they're raped? They're not. There is no witness.
Yeah.
So that I disagree with.
How about, would you tell your girlfriend the next day? Would you tell some? I'm not saying that you should. This is not the victim. I'm just saying is what lessons can be learned?
Because we're
in a position now
again,
where every woman is
two,
believed.
Two women shaking their heads saying they've never told.
No, that's hearsay then. But that, if I tell a girlfriend the next day, that doesn't make it so. Again, there's no proof. There's no witness. My telling somebody doesn't make
it
so.
What would you suggest then?
That women just unfortunately have to be more careful. And it's not even their fault. You could just be walking down the street and it can happen. Yeah. It can happen to you.
I would point out that, in retrospect, yes, there are things that Dr. Ford could have done differently, but she did take a polygraph and she did pass it. And I'm guessing that she felt that that was corroborative. She did have her medical records, which she didn't want to turn over without some security that they would not have been made public, which I think is a reasonable fear given everything that we've seen. So, you know, she didn't handle it brilliantly. This isn't what she does.
No.
I mean, I think it almost speaks a little bit more to her credibility that it wasn't seamless and perfectly organized and strategized.
I really feel bad for Dr. Ford. I feel like she was ill-treated by her attorneys, who apparently didn't tell her that the Senate Judiciary Committee was willing to go out and interview her in California. There's a lot of stuff that is just really, really strange here, and that maybe she's being used as the poster child of a movement, and she didn't want to be. She submitted this anonymously.
In the summer,
and that should have been respected. And it's either, as Bruce said, her lawyers or somebody in Dianne Feinstein's office that leaked this. And here we are.
As an attorney, doesn't an attorney have the responsibility to communicate to their client any and all communication that might affect their case?
They are. And, you know, there are some sort of, like, as always, exceptions, you know, if that would lead to someone harming someone or killing someone. There's exceptions. But I just want to kind of refocus this for one second. If you're on the fence as to whether Christine Blasey Ford was, you know, credible, truthful, otherwise, when Brett Kavanaugh, now Justice Kavanaugh, stepped forward after she testified and gave the response that he gave, which was blatantly partisan, invoking, resentment over the election and the Clintons and saying there's a liberal conspiracy, saying something like what goes around comes around. That is not something I want to hear from my local county judge, when they're running for office, because to me, that sounds like I am going to have a chance. I'm going to be presiding over cases at some point that these liberal groups, including, for example, the ACLU, who I work with occasionally, they spent $1 million opposing this confirmation. And now he's going to have a chance. How can he be completely neutral when this organization who's before him repeatedly?
You look at his judicial record.
I have.
In the appellate court, 93% siding with Garland were there the same. But if the way that he was treated by the media and by the Democrats on that committee, I don't blame him one bit. I thought that he performed brilliantly. And I can
Josh,
tell you.
Do you really believe, and I divide his testimony into two things. There was the prepared statement where he was upset, and I think most people would understand why he would be upset. And he was angry, and he was sniffling, and he was almost a breakdown. And I don't think any of that was fake tears. But then, when it got to the Q&A session with the senators, don't you think he overstepped the bounds on more than one occasion? When he starts asking questions of Senator Klobuchar,
he did that over the edge. Yes, he did there.
Senator Feinstein.
He did.
Justice. Could you imagine anyone, Justice Rehnquist, Justice Scalia, anyone ever having that sort of demeanor?
But nobody's been attacked like this unfairly. And the way that these Democrats said within hours of him being nominated that they weren't going to support him. So what were they out to do? They weren't out to try to get to the truth or the bottom line of this. They were out to destroy this man. And I feel like I want to see a fighter. The fiction that the Supreme Court is not political, we ought to just dispense with that because we all know that's not the case.
But I just would point out to you, that's why they wear robes. That's why, I mean, Justice Rehnquist did not vote because he felt he did not want to... Chief Justice Rehnquist did not vote because he did not want to feel that when someone came in front of him, he had an interest one way or the other. I realize that these are human beings, that they're the products of their education and their background, but I think that we expect our judges to do whatever they can to put aside partisanship on both sides. Well, and the things that he's...
Caesar's wife.
But what do we expect of our senators? Let's talk about that. Shouldn't we expect more of our senators?
Our senators don't serve lifetime appointments. Our senators aren't, you know, sanctioned under Article 3 of the Constitution. They're not picked by the president. I mean, our senators can be voted out after 6 years. I think our senators should have term limits because some of them seem to be serving lifetime appointments. But I think that the Senate has long since kind of lost its let's get to a compromise, and it looks more and more like the House every day.
Is violating a confidence how should we view that in the political climate? That's one of the big issues, and Josh has brought it up. That's one of the big issues because when the Democrats, when all this came out, the Republicans made a very good point during the first part of the testimony when they were all testifying, is that they were looking for fairness, and I think the Republicans stole the fairness issue for those watching out in TV land, and they owned it. And then the Democrat says, well, then we need the FBI investigation. And then Jeff Flake says, okay, let's have the FBI investigation. At that point, I think the Democrats stole the fairness issue back because they argued, well, it was only for a week or they didn't interview. So, I mean, that's on the issue. But the biggest issue is I don't think anybody who watches this, and the Democrats want to avoid this as much as possible, nobody can say that the likely leakers of her identity were either someone on Feinstein's staff or someone on the judiciary staff or her friends.
Let me ask you
her
a question.
Lawyers,
you're probably
friends.
Right.
But that person decided to violate her confidence. They violated her.
They did.
Why did she tell if she didn't think it would get out? What was the point then? She knew it would get out.
She said that she wanted to alert the White House about Brett Kavanaugh before the president made the appointment. Now, that's right. What she said. I find that a little hard to believe that she felt by going to her Democratic congresswoman that was the best way to get information to the White House. She's a PhD. You could call the FBI local office. You could have called the White House switchboard, and you would have spoken to somebody who would have listened to her story. They may not have believed it.
Well, everyone who tried to call the FBI switchboard to say corroborating testimony apparently were given the runaround and told to file something online. But I think in theory you're right. But she did come forward right after Justice Kennedy announced.
She also
his
didn't know any Republicans.
Well, I mean,
she's in
California.
At
where she's from,
well,
where she's living.
There's a Republican party in California.
If you want to get something to the White House, and you're 53 years old, and you're a PhD. You should be able to figure that out.
And what I don't understand, Bruce, is why didn't she come forward 10 years ago when Brett Kavanaugh was elevated to the most important appellate court in the country short of the Supreme Court? She didn't do it then.
She probably didn't know. I mean,
I think the
people don't.
I want to raise a larger question here. When you talk about keeping a confidence, do you think Mark Felt did the right thing when he called Woodward and Bernstein? Was that the act of a patriot or a traitor?
History
I want
is
to think about that.
Patriot.
Pardon?
I want to think about that.
Okay.
I think the issue is, I think he was a patriot. Okay. Back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce and I back in Chicago. We've got a text here, and it is from Gregory listening to us in Georgia. The lesson, if you're going to make a sexual assault allegation, be prepared to go big or go home.
She did go big.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So the thing is, if it happens again, that's what you got to be prepared. You've got to be able to put yourself out there like Dr. Ford did, if you want to do it.
But
go ahead.
But she really didn't go big in the way that Bruce was describing earlier because she didn't have her ducks in a row. I think that's the issue.
Okay. Now, if I may bring up let's push these allegations aside. Allegations are truth. Let's put this aside. Let's just talk about how he acted in high school and in college, being blind drunk and all sorts of things.
He never said blind drunk.
Well, he denied.
He denied.
But he didn't seem to deny ever drinking, ever doing anything crazy.
No, that's not right.
He denied drinking to excess. He denied ever
blacking
out.
But his college roommate talked about his drinking to excess. Now, I do not think someone should be judged on what happened 35 years ago. But why lie about it now?
Didn't lie. He admitted that he drank too much at times. What he said is that he did not he was not a blackout drunk.
When you read his calendar, for him to say those are drinking games,
grabbing skis with the
he shouldn't.
He said he drank too much. Catherine.
No. I don't think he did drinking that he called drinking games that were sexual games and Renata, how you pronounce
member
her,
of the Renata alum. Yeah.
It's obvious what was going on. And while he shouldn't have been judged on what he did 35 years ago, the fact that he tried to cover it up, that's what
it is. I disagree that he covered anything up.
I have to say one thing. Everybody here, what was the drinking age when you were in high school? And were you legal before you graduated from high school? Anybody?
It was 18. I grew up in Louisiana, and everybody was drinking a lot.
Everybody was.
But you know that you...
I really did not have a drink in high school.
Okay.
I'm going to admission here. I did not drink beer in high school. I hate beer. I don't like beer. I'm the completely opposite of Brett Kavanaugh.
Kiss your Supreme Court nomination goodbye.
I'm gone. Okay?
I don't drink alcohol at all. I think we should bring prohibition back.
Trump doesn't drink.
I know.
I know.
So against
that. But I want to say, when he said that he was drinking legally in high school, come on. We all knew what was legal and what wasn't. Don't be ridiculous.
Bruce, can I see something?
Surely.
Just the voters out there. You know, the confirmation vote is not necessarily the last word on Justice Kavanaugh. If the Democrats take the House, they'll have the subpoena power of the House. And if he lied under oath, that is a high crime or misdemeanor, which, of course, everyone who's lived through the Clinton impeachment would know. Now, Supreme Court justices have never been impeached, but this is all the more reason to keep in mind that elections have consequences.
Is that a good idea for the Democrats to talk like that?
I mean, I'm not saying they should. Impeachment requires two-thirds of the Senate.
Well, no, but Jerry Nadler is already talking about it. And he will be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House if the Democrats take control. I mean, should the Democrats be talking about... I think most people now, whether regardless of what side, the last thing you want to hear is about Brett Kavanaugh because you're like up to here with it.
I hope they talk about it because I think that's going to play right into our hands.
Actually, I was counseling a congressional candidate not long ago who the question comes up for people who are running for Congress, would you vote to impeach the president? And my advice to him, which also is my belief, is that to say that you would vote for impeachment when you do not have any idea as to the facts of the situation. I mean, yes, there are things that Trump has done that are troubling. The New York Times article on the Trump family's finances, it was very troubling.
But he didn't do that when he was president.
So, but to say, why, yes, I would vote to impeach him because I am blindly partisan, that one doesn't play. And I don't think it's going to play for Brett Kavanaugh either.
I think this is where Elizabeth and I may part somewhat. I think part of the but part of the reason I think the Democratic Party has lost so much is, again, I mean, just sort of soft peddling, and I'm not saying you are, but sort of soft peddling the message and actually eventually having no message. People want to hear. I mean, if I were that candidate, I would say, look, I don't know the facts, but if the facts support impeachment, I will absolutely do everything in my power to step forward and bring papers of impeachment.
But let me ask you this question. Do you believe that Michael Avenatti, did he help or hurt the case against Brett Kavanaugh?
You know, as an attorney, one of the things that I remember having hammered into my brain is if you've got a weak argument, don't feature it. Because you give the other side a laser beam focus to attack. And I think that's what he did. He brought this kind of, you know, his own, and I like some of his stuff, but a lot I'm questioning. He brought his own ego into this, and he brought this person who had somewhat, you know, outlandish claims. I don't know if they're true or not. And then he was on TV, you know, and this got equalized with the Christine Blasey Ford and some of the more legitimate things. And I think it hurt in the end.
Elizabeth, what do you think?
Michael Avenatti, basta.
Yeah, it is. He got a taste of the great, and he was in the media. And then what happened, all of a sudden he wasn't in the media anymore. Oh, my God, I better go find some way for me to get in the media. And we'll find a month from now there's going to be something else that he's going to be in the media for.
A response, a text response to your last comment before this issue. Drinking too much doesn't make you a predator. Ask the Duke lacrosse team.
The Duke lacrosse story is a great example of what can happen when the mob rules. And I would encourage everyone to read Stuart Taylor's book about the Duke lacrosse, because that was in my mind a lot during these hearings. A completely fake event. And four innocent men paid for it.
I think you will hear, you may hear more discussion of that between now and Election Day, because, again, I go back to the president's comments last night about giving matches to arsonists and basically kowtowing to the mob. I think that's going to be the focus of a lot of congressional campaigns, and I think a lot of the video that we saw on the street last week is going to be used by Republicans in the coming weeks before the November midterms. When we come back, we're going to talk more about those midterms, what it means, and what are some of the key issues above and beyond what we've just discussed that may turn some of the Congress from red to blue. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us. Back shortly after the network news.
Hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join us on our weekly road trip to see America's most offbeat and unusual attractions. Wild Travels, available on your local PBS station. Or it darn well should be.
Live from Chicago, it's Saturday Night Live. The Experience. For the first time ever, get an inside look at the making of SNL. Critics nationwide are raving. Over 500 artifacts direct from the show. Be a part of Wayne's World, Weekend Update, and so much more. Experience all it takes to put the show together. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at 360 North State Street in Chicago. For tickets, visit museum.tv.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key.
Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Elizabeth Austin is here. She is a Democrat. She's also a strategic communications consultant. She's been carrying the water for the Democrats this evening, getting help from Professor Peter Hanna. He's an adjunct law professor at Chicago Kent College of Law, also does a lot of work with the ACLU. Kathy Posner is here. She is the former assistant legislative inspector general for the city of Chicago. And Josh Cantrow is here, a Republican attorney specializing in cyber security. You wanted to question me on a point, Elizabeth.
I'm going to correct you.
You're going to correct me. Okay. Stand by for all of you people who love when I'm corrected. Go ahead.
You said that the president's words of, you know, don't hand matches to a mob or whatever.
Yes.
We're going to make the difference in the midterms. And I think you are wrong. And here is why. There are the districts, such as the one in which I live, where a canned ham with a D next to its name wins. There are similar districts where the canned ham with an R wins. And the districts that are flippable are the ones where sometimes people vote for the D ham, sometimes they vote for the R ham, depending on which ham or human being is more attractive, says the things that they more align with, and speaks to them in a way that they believe. And I don't think that in these swing districts, there are a few, I think, in Illinois particularly, we're going to see some swings because of Trump. Mm-hmm. But I think nationwide, in the districts that tend to go back and forth, you're going to see people voting for the more attractive candidate. And I think that's why Beto O'Rourke is probably going to win in the Senate, because he's a charmer, and Ted Cruz, whether you like his policies or not, I don't think anyone, even his mother, has ever called him a charmer.
So I want to go on the record as saying that I think Ted Cruz will win, but that's going to be interesting. But on the other hand, in these swing districts, I don't think Michael Avenatti's all that popular either.
Not at all.
And they don't like Linda Sarsour. That's a big problem with her being sort of the leader of this movement. And there's a lot of good images. And I can tell you on the right, I'm seeing a lot of things where she's going to be the poster child.
Yeah. No, well, I think that what we're talking about is that there's going to be, between now and November, there's going to be a lot of commercials that are going to be made. The point that I made in the last hour is that a lot of the comments that the president referenced, they may not use that exact bite, but they're going to talk about all the video that exists of women screaming in the face of U.S. senators. And a lot of women are going to be offended by that, not just men. I think a lot of women are offended. You told the story anecdotally about your grandmother during the break. I mean, this goes back to Anita Hill.
Mm-hmm.
The things that they heard, they don't like. The people who watch C-SPAN, who are virtually almost 100% voters, this is what they see every single day. And they covered the demonstrations a lot more effectively, I think, than some of the networks did. And I'm just saying is that with all that venom that's out there, I think it's going to come through, because what the people saw on television was different than what the national commentators are telling them they saw on television.
But you know,
it's not unlike the 1968 convention riots. The people in middle America were watching that, and very few people liked what they saw. But all the network commentators were saying how horrible it was that the police were being, you know, beaten up protesters were being beaten up by the police.
Just very briefly, you know, they're going to see the women screaming at, you know, or not even screaming, but engaging with senators at the elevator. But they'll also see Orrin Hatch telling women, grow up.
Yeah.
And I think that is, in a two-second soundbite, it's really powerful. It's a, you know, older white man telling women who are saying, like, we are victims of sexual assault, to grow up. So there's plenty of fodder, I think, on both sides. We're going to have lower turnout in the midterm like we have had in every midterm ever, probably, you know, historically, if history is any precedent. But I think the Democratic side is a lot more riled up and has a lot more...
Kathy.
The Orrin Hatch line, is it going to be used, you're saying, in every single congressional race in America?
No, no, but...
No, it's not going to make any difference... Downstate Illinois.
The big change is going to be in the Senate. I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about that the Republicans could lose the Senate. I don't think there's a chance the Republicans are going to lose the Senate.
I had a long conversation with former Congressman Michael Flanagan, best remembered for having beaten Ross Dinkowski.
Yes.
He said Senate, we're going to gain 3-5. And the House, we will keep a majority, probably lose 15. But we're going to... Gain in the Senate.
Okay, now he's a Republican, so.
So I want to address Peter's point, and I understand, and most of my friends are on the progressive left, that your side is fired up, but I can tell you ours is too. The enthusiasm gap has now narrowed from 12 to 2 in congressional races. The president's approval ratings are inching towards 50%.
Well, 42, that's a big inch.
No. The real Clear Politics polls there are several of them that have him 48, 49, and Rasmussen has him at 51.
All right, I'm going to take a call. Ron and KTKZ in Sacramento, California. Go ahead.
The way it looks to fly over country, the Democrats there's not going to be a red, blue wave. There's a huge walk away movement, or maybe it's a runaway from the extremist nutcase Democrat Party. And let me just say, John Cox out here, Republican candidate, really has a chance we need to get a Republican in a statewide office. Anybody inclined, send $1 or $5 to John Cox for governor. But anyway, no, I'm serious. He has a really good chance, and it would be extremely important. We got to start de-Stalinizing the People's Republic of California. And one last thing, Bruce. The way I see it, and a lot of people see, Dr. Ford is a sniveling, calculating, far-left operative, kind of a Mata-Hari traitor that almost upended this guy, Judge Kavanaugh, a brilliant career, extremely good peer review.
We're getting into your opinion, and again, I don't think a lot of people think that she was sniveling. But anyway, thank you for your call.
I just want to make a point. John Cox is here from Illinois.
He's from Chicago.
He ran about 15 times. He was a client of mine, I think, 3 or 4 of the times. I don't even remember what races they were. Yeah, he was very. We actually lived in the same a condo building, but it was like incredible to me that all of a sudden John shows up in California and is running for governor. He didn't win. I think he went for everything but dog catcher. I don't even remember of the.
He ran for Congress. He ran for recorder of deeds.
Didn't he run for water rec? He ran for Senate. I remember working
on
the Senate.
He's run more than Jim Overweis.
And then for him to show up now in California,
but
he never won here at all.
Well, maybe he can win in California.
Oh my God.
You know him well.
Yeah.
Did he ever hit on you?
No, he had a very young wife, though.
I'm just checking.
Yeah, he had the trophy wife.
We have to ask those questions now, and we're in the Me Too movement.
I don't think that we do, but I want to get back to something that you said. I'm going to correct you with a data point. I've been doing a lot of work in DuPage County, which is historically Republican.
Yes.
And the vote by mail is up to 22,000 requests so far. This exceeds 2016. So everybody's fired up. And incidentally, they keep a record of the early vote, whether you're Democratic or Republican.
Yes.
And the enthusiasm gap is small. You're right.
Okay. We've got a pause. When we come back, more calls. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Are you planning for the day when you can retire to your dream home in Palm Springs, California? A day surrounded by spectacular scenery, golf courses, a rich cultural life, and great dining? If you are, you'll need a guide, someone who knows where to look, an experienced broker, someone who knows the desert communities of Southern California and all they have to offer. That person is Brian Beard, who's been making dreams come true for over 13 years, selling over $100 million in real estate, including celebrity and architecturally significant homes to the rich and famous, and more importantly, to people just like you. Brian's company, Coldwell Banker, has agents worldwide, but Brian Beard is your man in Palm Springs. Call Brian now at 760-799-7096. That's 760-799-7096. Or visit him online at BrianSellsTheDesert.com. Bruce DuMont back in Chicago. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Roger's listening to us tonight. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce.
Yes,
thanks,
Roger.
For a fascinating show, as always.
Thank you.
You're great, man. You're great.
Thank you.
You know, sensationalized sexual assault allegations where no actual sex was claimed motivated an aggressive mob supporting a guilty until proven innocent narrative. Like Antifa protests against conservative speakers on the university campuses and the resistance, they principally identify with one party. We have low unemployment now, relative peace in the Middle East, progress in Korea, North Korea, improved trade deals, a rising GDP, increasing incomes, higher consumer confidence, the highest, I think, right now. Returning manufacturing and a record stock market bolstering our savings and retirement. I think people really need to think hard in November because electing guilty until proven innocent Democrats who will burn and destroy all of that and take us backwards, you know, I pray they don't get the matches.
So, Roger.
Amen, Roger.
Peter.
Roger, you know, I know it must be tough down there in Beto country in Austin, especially likely all alone, but I'll tell you that the guilty until proven innocent mentality, it seems to only apply to older white men, because if you're a young black man walking down the street away from police, you're guilty until proven innocent, and frankly, in some places, you're going to get shot. Democrats have pushed again and again reforming our criminal laws so that they're a little bit better. Democrats have pushed police departments in big cities like Chicago and New York and L.A. and Austin and Dallas and Houston and St. Louis and Detroit to adopt use of force policies that prevent them from presuming that the person that they're chasing is guilty until proven innocent, you know, with mixed results. And people who are not, you know, older white men now sitting in the Supreme Court are guilty until proven innocent across a large part of this country. So, yes, while you you know, enjoy, you know, a great deal of, you know, obviously a better retirement account and obviously unemployment being this low is really great for the economy and for all of us, there's still a tremendous amount of inequality in this country. And that presumption that you highlighted, that guilty until proven innocent, it seems to apply to only a section of the population. So
can I
well,
just
I
go ahead, Roger.
I would inject a contrarian point on that. You mentioned Beto. He's a white guy, and he was pretty much innocent from his drunk driving crash-a-thon and his break-in at the university. So he sort of goes the other way.
Elizabeth.
I mean, I think that all of us have done stupid things in our lives, more of them when we were young, one hopes, than after we've matured. But I think that I, as a voter, as a person, it depends on how you talk about it years later when you're offered something terrific. And, I mean, we were talking at the break. Justice Hugo Black was a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
That's right.
Hugo Lafayette Black was a member of the Ku Klux Klan in his teens and early 20s.
It was Bobby Byrd.
And
Senator
so,
Bobby Byrd,
right? And yeah. So that's right. And so when Representative Black, I think he was at the time, or Judge Black, was brought in to talk about that. It was brought up, and he said, yes, I did, and I resigned. Now I see it is wrong, and I'm sorry. That's what adults say.
He disavowed it, and it was after he was confirmed on the Supreme Court. And you're right. It is what adults say. And what they don't do is they don't dispute credible claims of drinking and boorish behavior that have been corroborated up, down, left, right. And we've been talking for a while. If now Justice Kavanaugh had gotten out there and said, hey, look, I was a jerk. I did a lot of stuff that was silly. I drank. I was a doofus. But for 35-plus years, I've been, you know, nothing but a public servant, a father, a basketball coach, and those days are, you know, my days.
The Democrats would have believed that.
I think we wouldn't have been having this conversation here, and I think the country wouldn't have been as torn apart as it now is.
I'd like to just go back to Roger's original point. Roger, wow, you gave a great summary. I was going to try to get that in during the show, but you beat me to it. And are we going to give all this up? I think that these points that you made should be put into ads for Republican congressional candidates across the country. Look at the week Trump had, not just on the Supreme Court, but with the trade deal, the record-breaking economy, and all the foreign policy wins.
But they can do that, but they're not going to elections are also emotional. I don't think they're going to move as many people as the ire that was raised last week by those that were demonstrating in the streets, shouting in the faces of United States senators. That video, I think, is more important than the standard political texts that are used by both parties. I mean, a lot of people, Republicans, know a lot of that stuff. Democrats don't know it. You've got to get that message to independents, but. The things that are going to move people out of their seats, I think we watched on television last week, one way or the other.
I agree with you, Bruce.
I just want to remind all of, you know, Roger, Josh, all of us, that there was a period of time, you know, post-Reconstruction in the 1870s, 1880s, that ran right up to the Great Depression called the Gilded Age. Everything looked great. The country was getting back together. The economy was looking great. The industrial age was booming. And it was the prelude to, you know, one of the darkest economic periods because we weren't actually acting on behalf of everyone. And it took multiple wars and multiple rebuilds to get back to any sense of normal.
There's always economic cycles. And you know what? We're going to have a downturn. There's no question about it. But what this president has done to supercharge this economy and get people back to work and get in with retirement accounts up, it is remarkable.
But look at all the people who don't have retirement accounts. Look at all the people who are working. That's true, and that's good. But they're working at jobs where they don't have health care. They're working at jobs that can't – if you can't work 40 hours a week and you're doing a good job and you're still on food stamps, there's something wrong. And not with you. It's with our system. And I have great concern that – I mean, I'm doing great. I had the best year of my life in 2017, and I'm very happy about it. As are my creditors. But you know, it's, I have concerns about people who have not had the opportunities that I have had and who are not doing well. And I feel like that's part of America, that we should care about those people.
But it is part of the opportunities that the Democrats have to make that case, yeah. Not only to those people that you're referencing, mm-hmm. but to other people, to independent voters, mm-hmm. that your way of moving forward is the better way.
Yeah.
That's what campaigns are all about.
Absolutely.
The Democrats need
to demonstrate.
That's
why I had such a good year.
That they're in charge, you know, and that they have been responsible leaders. I think what a lot of America saw last week was a demonstration of Democrats who were not, they did not lead with their best foot.
But I think
they did not lead with their best foot.
There are also a lot of.
I'm just saying the way in which they treated Kavanaugh, but secondarily the way they treated Dr. Ford. They outed her. They used her as a political ploy, and it didn't work.
I gotta say, I don't think anybody came off well. I don't think the Republicans came off well. I don't think the Democrats came off well. I know a lot of women who watched the same video that you saw and are furious at the Republicans. We don't know how many of which. We'll find out in November.
We know from the enthusiasm gap poll that the Republicans have closed it from 12 to 2 during this whole Kavanaugh thing. So I think that I think
but I mean, Democrats were already fired up. I mean, the gap was here. I think you're not seeing Democrats coming down or Republicans coming up. You're seeing Democrats up here, and the Republicans very smartly used it to bring their folks up. Now, are they going to be able to keep it for a month? We'll see.
The end result is Kavanaugh got through. That will dim the luster of the, we need you to get to the polls to vote for Republicans. We have a month.
People have been voting for the last.
True.
But like the patron saint of all terrible things in the Senate, Mitch McConnell said recently, it's time to move on. And I expect that a lot of the Republican would-be voters are going to move on. They got their lifetime appointment of Kavanaugh. But you know who is not going to move on? Every person who was moved by those videos the other way. And everyone in my circle, including folks who are independent and even leaning right, are just, especially lawyers, are just appalled by how the Supreme Court has been really debased. And Kavanaugh is, in many people's eyes, not legitimate. And when you get to that weird illegitimate place, it's really who is most harmed and hurt by it. It's the losers.
I can tell you that my independent friends and never-Trumper friends are very fired up, and they do believe that Kavanaugh is legitimate and that he was treated incredibly poorly. So it's just, we're going to see in a month who's right.
Let's go. Yeah. Let's go to Mike listening to you in Spokane, Washington on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Bruce. You know, a total chaos. United States senators shouted down, being chased to elevators. There is a right to protest in a civil, respectable manner. Judge Kavanaugh admitted he was out of line during part of his testimony. And heaven help the next Supreme Court nominee. Heaven help him or her if they're practicing Catholic. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California would remind a person that he or she sounds like a Catholic.
Well, there might have been better ways to make the point, but I'll tell you, you know, from my perspective, all representatives, Republicans, Democrats alike, seem so remote from the voters, so remote from their constituents. Try to get a meeting, you know, half hour meeting with your senator. Try to get a half hour meeting with your, you know, local state rep or county rep. It's really hard, and sometimes, unfortunately, it takes a powerful moment to get a message across.
Okay, we're gonna pause and then come back. 1-800-723-8229. Another half hour coming up. Don't go away. More to talk about as we come to you live from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and again, we're going to let our guests introduce themselves, and we begin with Elizabeth Austin.
I'm a writer and strategic communications consultant and a Democrat.
And you've done
speech writing
for political people.
For governors, for CEOs, and for laboratory directors at Argonne National Laboratory.
Okay. But you don't work for Republicans? I mean, if a Republican client came across, would
you mean
you...
in a campaign or a person?
Personally.
I mean, I would work for a Republican. I have worked for a Republican, just not in
but
campaigns.
Not in campaigns.
Okay. That's usually not done.
Kathy Posner.
Okay, I'm a Republican, but I have worked on campaigns for Democrats and has had clients from Justice Joy Cunningham was
you're an independent.
Was Democrat. any number of Democratic clients. I've done many things in my life. Right now we're billing.
Well, what is this legislative? What is this?
Former assistant legislative inspector general.
What does that mean? What did you do there?
We investigated public corruption, and, of course, the alderman got rid of the office after only one term in Chicago. So it was the most – it's the shortest thing I've ever done in my life, and it's the most fun. And, God, investigating public corruption was unbelievable.
There are 50 aldermen in Chicago.
Subpoena power is the most fun thing ever.
Boom.
I used to think chocolate cake a second after subpoena power. Yeah, and we had subpoena power.
We have 50 aldermen in Chicago.
Right.
How many are corrupt?
I had to sign so many confidentialities that even though it's now been 4 years since the office closed, and there could still be things that where it could be said that I was interfering with a federal investigation, I'm probably going to wait 10 years and then write a book.
Hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah. But I have to make sure that there's no interference with federal
investigation. But there might be some more indictments coming down, is what you're saying.
No, I would say probably not. We turned over everything to the FBI, and only one alderman ended up getting indicted. He's now pled guilty, and he's making a deal.
Okay.
FBI's too busy.
Peter Hanna.
My name is Peter Hanna. I'm an adjunct professor at Chicago Kent School of Law. I'm a technology attorney, and I work with the ACLU on a number of civil liberties issues. And my employers have probably been more Republicans than Democrats, but I have never held out against them.
Cool. What is a technology? When you say technology, what cases do you work on?
Well, basically, just as technology evolves, it raises a different host of different issues and issues that implicate our civil liberties. For example, right now, I know there's an ordinance being considered. I don't know if it's been formally introduced, but it would empower private entities across the city to use facial recognition technology and provide that to the police. So trying to understand what the civil liberties implications are and to craft legislation in a way that adequately addresses both the security interest and the civil liberties of the individuals, frankly, civil rights as well as the individuals most likely to be affected.
Okay. Josh Cantrell.
I'm a lawyer practicing mostly in the cybersecurity space and also professional liability. I'm a Republican. I'm also Jewish. Live in Chicago, and that's pretty rare to have a Jewish Republican.
But living in Chicago.
Living in Chicago, who's out there and kind of active like that. But there are more of us than people think.
Now,
a lot of them are in the closet, though.
You've lost a lot of friends over this, haven't you, over your politics?
Yes, and some distant family members as well. They're not happy. It was fine to be, I guess, a Republican, but as long as I was in the Never Trump category, that was fine. But since I've come out and been more supportive of the president and his policies, they really don't like that. I have an active Facebook page, and that's been a source of some controversy.
Yes. Well-written comments. Okay, we're Facebook friends. Okay.
Yes, we are.
Would you still vote for Trump if you saw him shoot someone on Fifth Avenue?
Running against Sanders, Warren, any of these progressive leftist Democrats, absolutely.
Even seriously, if he murdered somebody, you seriously would vote for him?
Over a socialist, yes.
Yeah, but he'd be in jail.
He'd be in jail, and then we'd get his vice
president. That's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
I want to talk about something that isn't necessarily a hypothetical, and I want to ask our Democrats to sort of weigh in on that. And that is, if you would have asked many Democrats in the last several months, Joe Biden, according to all of the polls that were taken, that Joe Biden, was in first place in many of these polls. And obviously this was before the Bernie Sanders campaign got cranked up or anyone to the left of center, and of which there are many in the Democratic Party. Did being quoted by Judiciary Republicans during this hearing into Brett Kavanaugh, the name that was held up the most was Joe Biden and what he did as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in charge of the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings. Do you believe at this moment in October of 2018, do you think that Joe Biden could be a viable candidate, or has the party moved too far or so far left, and he is, that position of him and the role of him has so much video associated with him? Is that the Achilles heel that will sink his political aspirations, if indeed he has any?
Okay, first of all, I think he has any. So there's that. I have a lot of concerns about Biden. I would have liked him to run. You know, 4 years ago, I was pro-Biden. I think his moment has passed. I think reminding all of us that he did not comport himself, in my opinion, honorably with Anita Hill. It is a reminder to me that, you know, when he had an opportunity to stand up for what was right, in my opinion, he did not. I think I also feel Democrats need to, you know, look maybe for someone who is not going to be in their late 70s at the end of the their term.
Yeah.
I'm not a spring chicken myself, but I feel that we need to start looking at a new generation of leadership.
Peter, what do you think about Joe Biden and whether he's viable in the wake of those hearings and all the Republicans reminding the nation about what he did during the hearings for Anita Hill?
I agree with Elizabeth 100%. I would just add that part of the Democratic Party's problem is coalescing around a message or a set of messages that, you know, accurately reflect the candidate they're putting forward. So there were tons of messages when Hillary Clinton was the nominee, but they didn't exactly fit with the nominee they put forward. And I feel like if the, you know, party machinery kind of deigns Joe Biden is the person who should be the nominee, we are going to be in the same situation we were before. The nice thing on the other side is there, you know, you ask anyone who's opened any newspaper in the past, any national newspaper in the past decade, what does the Republican Party stand for? It's instant. I mean, I think Donald Trump is changing a lot of what, you know, historically we knew, but, you know, strong defense, security, lower taxes, you know, workfare type programs, tough on crime. And you ask the same question of folks about the Democratic Party, the messaging is really garbled. So we need to focus our messaging and pick a candidate who, whether he or she is, whomever it is consistent with that set of messages.
Did anyone on the hearings last week, primarily Kamala Harris and Cory Booker or Senator Klobuchar, did any of them stand out to you because of the way they conducted themselves?
Not because of the way they conducted themselves in a way to elicit in me, like, that's a person I would want to see in the ballot. I mean, the way they conducted themselves often suggested this is a person who intends to be running in the primary. I think, honestly, it's a pretty open field. I like Kamala Harris. I like Elizabeth Warren. I like Cory Booker. But I think they have bigger fish to fry before they even contemplate running in the primary.
Kathy. I was going to ask the professor a question for a second. You described the message of the Republicans where you said lower taxes, tough on crime, good economy. Aren't those things that we all want? I wanted to thank you for making a good.
Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering whose side you're on.
For the Republicans.
I wanted to thank you. Yeah. So when I say lower taxes, that can mean different things to different people. So I think when you say that to the Republican establishment, it means lower taxes for corporations. When I say tough on crime, I think to the Republican establishment, that means tough on drug crime, low-level crime. When you say that elsewhere...
Oh, crime. I'm broken windows theory. Low-level crime is very important.
When I say strong on national security, you know, that to me means strong on national security in a meaningful way, not security theater. But you say to the Republican establishment, you know, I don't even know what it means since we're getting so friendly with, you know, some of the most dangerous sovereigns in the world. But, you know, the Democratic message has been garbled. I'll admit that. And what it should be is basically whether you're, you know, a white guy, black guy, a Latino person, gay, straight, whatever, you're going to be on the same playing field. No one is going to jump over you in line because they're, you know, minority. We are trying to create and establish a permanent middle class where equality, and the term that I think we need to focus on more than equality is parity. We have no parity in this country. The disparities between wealthy and poor are bigger than they've ever been. Between, you know, different racial groups are bigger than they've ever been. So I think the Democrats, you know, again, I'm not a Democratic strategist. I have no affiliation with the party, but I think really they need to coalesce around parity. We need a more equal and equitable America.
Let me just give, like, communism.
Not at all. Not in the slightest. Not in the slightest.
It sounds a lot like socialism.
Right, socialism. Equal opportunity is not socialism.
You heard it here first, folks.
The Democratic nominee for president will be Kamala Harris. It will be Kamala Harris. She is, in my view, on her road to the nomination.
Well, I think she shares that view, but I'm not sure the rest of us agree.
She checks off all the boxes, and that's what the Democrat Party is about now, checking off boxes. Progressive, black woman.
I do want to point out, though,
what about her background?
Oh, I don't think that matters to most Democrats. I think it's a matter of checking off the boxes.
Thank you for your insights into my brain.
Is some of her personal political baggage, is that going to be fodder in the campaign, or is that going to be something that from 25 years ago that people don't want to talk about?
Oh, I think that'll probably help her with the Democratic base.
But I want to point out, the Republicans, when Obama was president, went through a similar kind of crisis of messaging, crisis of faith. There was the Tea Party. There were all these little splinter groups, and we're here today.
We got to pause. Back to Charlie Scott.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
We have reaction tonight from Boise, Idaho, KBOI. John is listening. Bruce, I think that the predictable apologetic reaction from the radical liberals in response to the Kavanaugh confirmation will be so apoplectic that it will further embolden the independents to move right. We need to look no further than the tweet from a Stephen Colbert writer where she said, "I'm glad we ruined Brett Kavanaugh's life." So.
I mean, he's a Supreme Court justice. I don't know how ruined it is. They have a basketball court out there.
It's, and it's a job for life.
It's a job for life.
I mean, we humiliate our children every day. It's just another one for the kids.
But tweets like that come out a lot. You see it, and it really reveals what a lot of Americans think, but there hasn't been proof of.
Thank goodness Republicans never tweet anything mean.
But I'm saying that the whole Hollywood and entertainment media complex is just so they're so full of hate for Republicans
and a million other.
I'm going to give you an assignment. Have you been watching The Good Life, The Good Place?
No.
You got to watch The Good Place. It will change your mind about Hollywood. It's the loveliest show ever on television.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a blessing.
But Hollywood people think because they have so much money, they can parachute it in around the country and make a difference. And that,
like the Koch brothers.
Well, but those are limited examples.
They send money, not just celebrities. Celebrities have not proven to be very successful. I mean, they get a lot of publicity, but again, the celebrities, they didn't help Hillary Clinton. They didn't help her. She had them all, and it didn't help her.
She had Oprah.
To your point, Bruce, there was a Get Out the Vote rally in Ohio with Beyonce. And somebody was telling me about that. I'm like, I would show up in Ohio. I did actually show up in Ohio. I knocked on doors, but I would go see Beyonce. I wouldn't necessarily vote.
Well, they didn't help turn out.
That's my point. Everybody went to see Beyonce, but they did not go to the polls. That's my point.
And to be clear, let's forget.
This gets back to what I said a little bit earlier. The Democrats need to spend a lot more time educating their voters.
Absolutely.
Because they have a lot of uneducated voters that don't understand things like the Electoral College. They don't understand that.
Nobody understands the Electoral
that
College.
I understand it.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, you and I understand it. I'm talking about general voters.
I was taught it in school.
Yeah.
But here's the point. It's important. I think it's a responsibility for both parties to educate their constituents about what's happening in the world.
Yeah, Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
So to fan the flames that somehow if you're going to go out there and you're going to, you know, march for repeal of the Electoral College without someone explaining to them that, folks, it's not going to happen. And here's why it's not going
to
happen.
We're talking about the average Democrat. And the problem is, to get back to my point from an hour ago, is that the average Democrat has not accepted that Trump won the election.
Yes.
And that's the biggest problem in terms of the division.
I look at that election as not Donald Trump winning. I look at it as Hillary Clinton losing. Yeah. Okay? The deck was stacked, and she failed to actually play the cards that she was dealt in a way like to win. She lost the election. That's how it is. I don't know any Democratic voter who's still stewing over Trump winning. Even the ones who held their, you know, who are super Hillary folks, to the ones who held their noses and voted for her, they all acknowledge she lost. I mean, whether Russia was involved or not, she lost. Bob Mueller hasn't put anything out to make us think otherwise. At the end of the day, the message that you've said that needs to be impressed upon every voter and anyone who's undecided or out there, just remember, elections have consequences.
Yes,
absolutely.
Plain and simple.
Agreed with you 100%.
So whether you're Republican or Democrat, and I hope, you know, if you're undecided, you're a Democrat, keep that in mind. Your vote, no vote is trivial. Every vote has an impact.
You've got to explain to your constituents, when the election is over, you lick your wounds, you fight harder, you run a better campaign with better candidates the next time, and that's how you make change. You can't just say, okay, Donald Trump was elected president by the Electoral College, and by the way, he's going to make appointments to the Supreme Court. And then you got people, half the people, who may be Democrats, they're saying, well, why does he get a chance to make that point?
I've not heard anybody say that, Bruce.
You know, here, look, Merrick Garland was put forward, and what happened?
But that's a different story.
But there's been an attempt to delegitimize this president from the day he was elected president. But it's been one thing after another, like Russia somehow influenced the election. One excuse after another.
We know Russia was involved. I mean, that's a fact that every intelligence agency has agreed upon. That
they didn't change one vote.
Do you believe, you're a cybersecurity guy, do you believe that Russia and China, as the president has alleged, are both involved in this campaign?
I am beyond a shadow of a doubt certain. They are.
In your view, how are we doing?
Certainly attempting.
I mean, cyber espionage, if you're a sophisticated country with a lot of resources like China is, China has launched cyber attacks. One actually outed 18 or 19 Chinese spies who were summarily executed. So we know they have the means. We know they have the ability. Russia, we have all of our intelligence agencies have agreed, has done so, and they want to impact these upcoming elections.
And is doing so.
I mean, there were.
By the way, we want to have you back on before the elections. But again, I want to come back and we'll focus most of the show on the charges that you've just made. They're very serious, because I think no matter what your politics are, I think you want to know that your vote does count. It's important to get out and vote, and you want to make sure that it's not being manipulated by any foreign. So let's talk specifically about what's being done. Last word to you, Elizabeth.
Oh, my goodness. Vote.
That's it.
Vote. Vote.
Everybody should vote if you want to vote. You don't want to vote? Don't complain. Thanks to our guest, Elizabeth Lawson. Thank you very much. Peter Benna, thank you very much. Kathy Posner and Josh, we thank you very much for joining us as well. And Josh Canfro. Our program this evening has been produced by Jenny B. Productions in association with WCGO in Evanston, Illinois. And our thanks to Dylan Klauke and Sam Greenberg and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join us on our weekly road trip to see America's most offbeat and unusual attractions. Wild Travels, available on your local PBS station. Or it darn well should be.
Live from Chicago, it's Saturday Night Live. The Experience. For the first time ever, get an inside look at the making of SNL. Critics nationwide are raving. Over 500 artifacts direct from the show. Be a part of Wayne's World, Weekend Update, and so much more. Experience all it takes to put the show together. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at 360 North State Street in Chicago. For tickets, visit museum.tv.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. Just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.